So I have a new favorite fan theory. And when I say fan theory, I mean, like, for example, the theory that, like, all of the Rugrats are actually dead and their parents are in, like, a grief support
group.
That
one fucks me up. Like, I feel like I got questions about that, but I'm like, wow, dead children, okay.
That one really, really checks out to me, I have to say. Like, I feel like the theory
I haven't done
tracks.
The research, but I'm interested.
Yeah, and I'm interested in it as, like, an alternative theory regardless. Anyway, so that used to be my favorite theory, and as of last night, it is replaced by...
Oh, shit. Their, hot takes.
On lesbian TikTok right now. My girlfriend showed me this last night. I don't really TikTok. I just get shown them. And...
You get a curated selection made by Maddie. That's it.
I
Jamie,
do.
Like, Jamie can't look at social media. She just has other people send her. Like, I just send you screen recordings of TikToks I like. And your girlfriend's just like, watch this. And we're just all out here just like creating the best sides of the internet for you. Go on.
She'll be like, are you up for a few? And I'm like, ugh, I should. Because I feel like I need to know like what's going on.
I guess I'll stay in touch with the kids.
Anyway, there are a bunch of videos right now about Mean Girls, the theory that Regina George always was gay and like that's the whole problem. Like she's a closeted lesbian and she's like in a lot of emotional pain.
Yeah, that's why she probably made, it could, yeah, I could see this. Go
on. I'll run down the points. For example, she goes after Janice Ian for like seeming gay. And
oh, yeah, she feels attacked. She, like, doesn't want to be outed, so she's like, I hate lesbians. I want to prove it to you.
And Janice and Regina were best friends in middle school until...
Oh, yeah!
Until Regina got a boyfriend, and Janice was weirdly jealous of him. But was she? Like, we don't ever get that confirmed anywhere. Like, that's
Regina
just what Regina
just
perhaps
says
wants.
She was... Oh!
Then she
I'm
has an
already,
all...
I'm already on board.
Mm-hmm. She's an all-girls pool party for her birthday, and of course Janice can't come because it's an all-girls pool party. But I'm like, who threw that party? And excluded a seemingly, called out that it's a little gay by excluding someone who you think might be gay. Just saying.
Yeah, that's actually being like, I'm having kind of a gay fantasy party. And for that reason,
the gays are
I'm
not
excluding
allowed.
You because I'm having my own gay fantasy. Okay, listen, keep going. I love this. Love it.
She doesn't ever seem to really like her boyfriends. Like, she's just kind of using them to make other girls jealous. Like,
and like
your hair looks
clout.
Sexy, pushback. Yeah, it's
yeah,
all just
noise.
Absolutely. And then
for the record, no one's hair looks that sexy pushed back. Like I don't know.
It depends on the cut, but I'm gonna say like usually no.
Yeah, right?
His hair looked ridiculous. Anyway,
I agree.
Also that actor's gay, so keeping it in the families.
That's true. Yeah, honest, I've listened to him on some podcasts. He seems like a real delight, and I think he wrote
a
Mean Girls cookbook.
Oh. Well, that makes sense to me because he's a host of like Cupcake Wars or some shit like that. I don't know. He's on a thumbnail. He's
it
a host
would make
of
sense.
Something.
I think he wrote a Mean Girls cookbook, so it's all coming full circle.
Okay. And then I think that she's clearly in a lot of emotional pain that like doesn't have a source that's told to us, so we're left to infer, so we could choose to infer that it's because she's closeted. And then the real kicker is, remember at the end when like the circle breaks up and they all kind of make their own different friends and Karen starts doing the weather and Caddy's
I fucking love Karen doing the weather
back
that's
with Janice
high key for me.
Do you remember what Regina does?
No.
She plays rugby or field hockey or some shit. And they're
oh,
like, the jock
right.
girls aren't afraid of her. And they show her just like plowing down a field in
Man,
all the
why
gear.
You gotta do field hockey like it's queer like this, but I'm open to it. You know? Okay. I'm not here to like guess sexualities, but I like this theory.
No, it's a theory about just like another layer to the movie. And I don't know, as I kind of want to watch it with like that in mind. And
that
it could
in
even
mind?
Be. Yeah, mm-hmm. with that in mind. But then I feel like Rachel McAdams would have to like have that in her head to play it right. But I feel like maybe she did play it right, like a little gay. I don't know. I have to rewatch it.
I also just want to say, a big fan of Rachel McAdams. Mm-hmm. Just like big fan.
Yeah. And did you know that
hot as shit,
Lacey
babe.
Chabert mm-hmm. or whatever the fuck her name is, Gretchen Wieners.
Okay.
She went on.
She came into my store one time when I was working. She has very small feet. I'm just telling you.
She was
like a size 5 or 5.5. Wow. I knew I got shoes for her to
That's
try.
Odd
like
her
very
to me.
Small feet. Yeah. She was, wow. Well, she's really short.
Yeah, she is. She's a very small person.
She was very polite. That's all I'm going to say. She was very nice and like unassuming and like low-key.
That's cool for you as a person interacting with her.
Yeah, she was chill. Anyway, go on.
She was in a movie called Christian Mingle on Netflix that I did watch when it came out because I was like, what the fuck is this? And my friend was visiting from out of town, and so we just like got high and watched Christian Mingle, and it was a really good time. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome. Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast. So.
It's basically an SVU episode with help from talking rats.
This month in December, please stop douching your genitals. Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it. I'm like, who's that guy?
So it fit like a tiny belly shirt with like cap sleeves. And when the ambulance came, like that's what he was wearing.
You're saying all sorts of crazy shit now.
I'm gonna peak in high school and then die.
I do believe in fairies. I do. It's franchising our platform. We're franchising it, okay? Welcome to Why Are You Like This, the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, the lesbian undertones of Mean Girls, whatever we're noodling on at any given time.
Lesbian undertones of anything.
Actually, though, facts for sure. Whatever we're noodling on, like I said, in order to determine why people are the way that they are, that is Jamie Ryan looking for the lesbians in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams having more lesbian friends than me in Chicago.
That's true.
It is. I often think about that.
Wow, I'd never really clocked that, but yeah, no, I yeah, that checks out.
No, I absolutely did. Anyway, we are not here to talk about Mean Girls tonight or problematic Tina Fey instances. That's not for today.
Okay,
but I did want, in introducing this topic, I wanted to circle back on some comments that I made in a recent FUPdate about the collective unconscious.
Oh, wow. I love a little bit of like a corrections moment.
It's more of a clarification and also a nod to that, like, this situation is applicable today too. Anyway.
Also, I just want to say for people who think we always agree, when I was editing that episode of the FUPdate, I was like, man, we haven't fought like that about shit that we disagreed with on an episode in a minute. And, you know, entertaining. So if you want to hear us completely disagree about some nonsense, that's a good one.
You know, what's funny is some people like listening to people disagree and I don't. And so when I was editing that, I was tempted to like cut some of it, and because I was like, "Ooh, this is kind of tense right here." And then I was like, wait, people like to listen to things like that.
You were the most argumentative on that episode that you've been in a long time. That's what I'll say.
Well, I told you I've been agitated lately, so.
agitated.
Okay. So in that FUPdate where we heavily disagreed about one's ability to invent a color, I also talked about how the Tom Petty song Won't Back Down and Sam Smith's Stay With Me are the same melody.
Yes.
And
yes.
I said that Tom Petty did not come for him. And
oh, did Tom Petty come for him?
In an article I read in Rolling Stone.
Tom.
No. So it's very amicable. Sam Smith and Tom Petty settled out of court, but there was a settlement. And when Tom Petty talked about
it.
There was money exchanged.
Oh, shit.
Because it was melodically identical. And I don't know how you would. I don't know what happened. But I just wanted to clarify that, like, there was some money exchange, but that there's no bad blood. And that, like, they both know that it was an accident and they've moved on.
Well, I mean, Tom Petty, RIP, so, like, you know.
He's really moved on. Sorry.
He's really moved on from this situation. That's interesting, though. I don't know how you have those kind of soundbite quotes and then are also like, but still pay me.
Yeah, I think it was more. Well, the quote from Tom Petty was that Sam did the right thing. And so I...
Oh, which was paid him?
Yeah. And so there was, I think, not pushback, it seems like, from Sam Smith. He was just like, oh, yep, that you're right. I'll pay you.
Well, I mean, you can't argue. That's a factual thing that you could be like, this is the exact same chord progression. This is just the same.
Yeah.
It's the same song.
Anyway, yeah, yeah. So the reason why we talked about that in the FUPdate is because I was using it as an example of the collective unconscious and how people could perhaps have the same idea independently of each other. And
okay,
tonight, I want to talk about having the same idea, but it's plagiarized and you don't realize that you've plagiarized something. And
oh, yeah. Yes. This is some shit. Let's do it. Let's get into it. I got feelings, thoughts, and some concerns.
So the term for this is cryptomnesia. Cryptomnesia.
I mean, it's just like a weird sounding thing, right?
It is. And Carl Jung also wrote about cryptomnesia. So that's...
Which, you know, Carl Jung, other patron saint of this podcast. Mm-hmm.
And he's a collective unconscious guy, synchronicity. And so like cryptomnesia is kind of adjacent to those things, but mm-hmm, it is mm-hmm. unique in that it's more about plagiarism specifically.
Yeah, that's fucking real.
Yes. So we're going to grab a definition from a source I don't think I've ever used on this website, which is dictionary.apa.org, American Psychiatric Association.
I would remember. Go on.
They tell us that cryptomnesia is a phenomenon in which people mistakenly believe that a current thought or idea is a product of their own creation when, in fact, they have encountered it previously and then forgotten it. Cryptomnesia can occur in any creative enterprise. As, for example, when an investigator develops a research idea that he or she believes is original, where in actuality it can be documented that he or she saw or heard the idea at some earlier point in time. Also called inadvertent plagiarism or unconscious plagiarism. And my two cents about, you know, word stuff is that crypto means hidden or secret and amnesia means amnesia. And this concludes our intensive 3-week course.
Mono means one and rail means rail. And this concludes our intensive 3-week course. That's for you Simpsons fans.
All right. So I feel like this is something that happens to me in my life a lot. I've never had like any kind of terminology for it before. The first thing like that I think of where I have experienced cryptomnesia is it happened to me in songwriting a lot when I used to do that. For example, the Lissy song, They All Want You. If you're listening to this right now, you could pause and go listen to that song. It's a great song, but
I don't know if I know that song.
It's very good. They All Want You by Lissy. I thought that I wrote that song, but with different words.
And that's awesome.
Because I had listened to it like only a few times and really liked it, but it was like in a friend's car and I didn't own it. And then I like wrote this song that I was pretty happy with. And like a year later, I got that Lissy album again. Hold up. And I realized like
I thought I wrote this.
Except for just like a tiny little turnaround, it's the same song. So it happens. But I don't know. Does that happen in your life? Do you ever think that like you've invented something or come up with something only to find that someone showed it to you earlier?
I think we've had that with this fucking podcast.
We absolutely have. I was going to let you put yourself on blast. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we've talked about things too. And I think I've definitely done this in interpersonal stuff where like I've been like, oh yeah, that was my idea. And then another person will be like, no, that was definitely my idea. And we've had that moment where you're like, no, I'm pretty sure I thought about that. I even had somebody text me the other day and they were like, were you the one that sent me like this, you know, pizza recipe or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I was like, I think so. I think I sent that. Yeah, that seems like a thing I would send. And they're like, cool, if you can find it for me, send it to me. And I just like searched our text history and I was like, nope, you definitely sent this to me. And you're like, a friend sent this to me. And I was not that friend, but I had like the memory of being involved in a conversation about it. So I was like, yeah, it was me. I did this. Like, I do think sometimes, like, if I noodle about something or I, like, get invested in something, especially if it's, like just an idea mm-hmm. or, like, a theory about something,
mm-hmm.
if I engage in conversation with somebody else about that for, like, some period of time, I think I, like, revisionist history sometimes. Not that I don't think we were both talking about it. Like, I remember the other person being a part of that.
Yeah,
but
for
I think
sure.
sometimes I think, like, I was the one who started the conversation, mm. even though I wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or also, I think in group brainstorming sessions, it can be really hard to, like, credit things correctly because you just kind of get momentum.
You were all just throwing spaghetti at the wall and right. seeing what stuck.
And you and don't then really you remember like, word for word. Right, right, right. You're like, when I thought of this. And but also maybe you did kind of think of that because you're all mm-hmm. having a conversation. How many times are you in
sometimes
a group?
Sometimes you do have the same idea as somebody yes. in a group brainstorm at the same time and somebody else just says it first. And then you seem like a dick if you like think it was your idea, but maybe you also had it before it was spoken.
And I read about that oftentimes in meetings that happens to people when they're a little bit stressed and they're not fully listening, or mm. if they are not fully listening because they're thinking about what they're going to say, and then they
that's
passively
legit.
Hear someone say something, then like 10 minutes later, they're likely to say that same idea and have no idea that they heard it while they were thinking about something
oh.
else.
That can make you seem like more of a jackass
absolutely
than you are.
Absolutely, it can. Yes. I'm really hope
oh, actually,
that I'm not
doing that.
That's
giving me a lot of compassion for maybe when that happens.
Me too.
People are like, well, this bitch just took some shit from me. I'm like, no, they didn't. They didn't think that they did. Like, they were just like in whatever plane of their brain, you know, that they were and like came back to something.
Like in that moment, it is their truth that was their idea. They're not just trying to like be a dick and take your idea.
100%. Actually, that makes me feel like more times that happens, I'll have a little bit more like empathy or compassion for the person who does that. Because I mean, I've done it. I've done it mm-hmm. with you that I've been like,
I've done it with you too.
Yeah. I think that was my idea. And you'll be like, nope. I got the receipts. Be it like, was mine. And I'll be like,
I'm
oh, okay.
My notes.
mm-hmm. I'm never offended by that. I mean, I think we've had it the opposite way.
We
though,
have
too,
for
you've
sure.
Been like, yeah. I think
when
that,
I thought
I
of
like,
this
I'm
episode.
And I'll be like, no, I'm pretty you sure that was my idea because I like watched this thing. And you'll yeah. be like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not shitty. I've never been offended.
No,
by
there's
that.
No hard feelings. We just can't remember the source of stuff.
I mean, and I don't know. Maybe you could call that codependency if you wanted to be like a dick Ooh. About it. God. But like, don't I do think that, yeah, there's like stuff in there that like, I don't know. You just like noodle on together and then it's like, who fucking came up with this? I don't know.
No idea. So some brief examples from popular culture I would like to give.
Oh, I'm actually really curious about how this plays into pop culture.
So do you remember how, or maybe not remember because I feel like it's still happening, but like people really come for Amy Schumer about stealing jokes and...
I have heard this narrative before, yes.
And my favorite joke that she's accused of stealing, I will tell you right okay. now.
Great. I can't wait. I love to laugh.
She told it on Last Comic Standing when she was a competitor on that show many years
mm-hmm,
ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a challenge where like they had to walk into a room with like a person who they didn't know. And I can't remember, like one person had like a clown and one person had a doctor and Amy was given a nun, and so she had to tell a joke to the nun.
And a nun.
You had to, like, okay. And I don't know that those were the other positions. I'm just throwing that out. But, like, they had to make their person laugh. And so Amy Schumer had to make a nun laugh. And the joke that she told is, and of course they told the nun what to say, but so mm-hmm, the nun mm-hmm. says, "Have you heard the good news?" Amy says, "Ma'am, I'm so sorry. My people are Jewish." The nun says, "That's okay. Your people just haven't found Jesus yet." Amy says, "No, we found him."
Oh. That's so good.
And so she's accused of stealing that joke. And someone did tell a really similar joke. Amy claims that like she like didn't take it from that. Like if there was any copying, that it was like absolutely not intentional. And I kind of always chalked this up to like collective unconscious stuff. Like this is a joke that many people could think of. Like history kind of laid out this joke for us a little bit, you know?
Sure. I mean, that to me doesn't seem like a a wildly, like,
it's not crazy, like, original.
No, I mean, I think about things. I feel like there's a lot of, like, rooted in the same kind of spectrum, like Christians v. Jews jokes. Like, mm-hmm. I think about, there was something about, I don't know, like some, like Christian, I don't remember the cadence of this, but there's some, like, Christian Jew joke about, like, the guy's trying to convince the girl to have sex with her, and the punchline is like, don't worry, I'll be Gentile. And
yeah,
but I'm also like, I'm sure there have been a million iterations of something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, like, that just kind
of. And that was
lends
an example
itself.
Of someone poorly recollecting a joke. And for that, you're welcome, everyone.
It's fine. It's fine. Then, Amy Schumer aside, I don't know. Jury's out on if she's, like, really stealing jokes or not. Who knows? I like to believe
yeah,
that it's unintentional.
Yeah, we're not here to tell you whether or not Amy Schumer is stealing jokes. We don't know, okay?
Absolutely not. Then in 2016, people start coming for Demi Lovato, who I really have always thought is very, very hot.
Yeah, for sure.
For her song Stars. And okay. Are a band that you and I used to listen to is coming after her, Sleigh Bells, saying that it's infinity guitars is like it's the same beat and partial melody. And the producers like said that they in no way were like copying that, like they hadn't listened to it recently. But I don't know, like shit gets in your head, like writing songs, mm-hmm. especially.
I mean, you thought you wrote a song and then
I
you were like, oh, fuck, I didn't write
thought
the
I
song.
Wrote a great song. Guys, that is a great song. Please listen to it. They all want you. It's great. Anyway.
Jamie once secondarily wrote it.
I did. It had different words, mm-hmm. but you know, that'd be whack if it somehow had the same words. That'd be crazy.
I would be stressed. I would be more stressed that it had the same words and you didn't realize you didn't write it.
Exactly.
You know?
Then something, that's a dissociative fugue or something.
Yeah, that's
a that's another little, episode.
Like, yeah, that's completely another episode. Mm-hmm.
And then the one of the most famous cases is George Harrison wrote My Sweet Lord, and it is the same song pretty much. Same melody, very similar beat, chord progression to the Chiffons. He's So Fine. So if you want to listen to any of these back-to-back, like, pause us. That's a fun thing that you could do. We cannot insert
I
them.
I do feel like this is fun. It's a fun, totally fun exercise, for sure.
Like the time that I forced a friend to listen to Warren Zevon's Werewolves of London and Sweet Home Alabama
on a roller coaster.
To be fair.
She just couldn't wait. She was like, listen, though, I can't wait the 4 minutes of this fucking ride for you to understand this. So I'm going to play it to you at speed on my cell phone on this ride.
Absolutely.
It's casual.
It was Adventure Express, though. And so it wasn't like it was like a big roller coaster. That's like
That's a fun one. Shout out to Kings Island for you Cincinnati fools. Shout out to Adventure Express.
Shout out Adventure Express. So I would like to pivot to a New York Times article.
Let's do it.
From 2016. And this was written in response to the issues with Demi Lovato and Sleigh Bells.
Oh, I'm interested to hear how this played out. Also, 2016 is like, that's pretty current. Like, I'm curious.
It's actually like really not that interesting what happened between them.
Oh, bummer.
It was just like the producers deny it. Demi Lovato says like she's no idea like what they're talking about. She didn't, to her knowledge, like infringe upon anything. And let's see, denied claims. Yeah. Also, people were coming for Ed Sheeran a lot.
That seems like something I remember vaguely, that people came for Ed Sheeran a lot.
Yeah, I remember that too. Yeah, it looks like maybe it was just settled. Wow. Well, as according to this 2016 New York Times article, inconclusive. At the time of this article, it was not resolved. So apologies about that.
Well, all right. Well, can't know everything. Clearly, it's not clear to them or us.
It is not.
It's also one of those things that how do you prove it in a court of law?
I can't remember what the law is, but like Vanilla Ice, people came for him for like essentially like sampling or just playing under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm.
Which I mean, yes, Mm-hmm.
He defended it saying that like the 13th note was different or something. And so I don't know like what the rule is or like what exactly the argument for like musical infringement or not is.
Sure.
It kind of seems like based on how like just various ones that I read about went, it just kind of seems like it depends on the tenacity of the person who's coming for you. Like,
I mean, I think that's real. We, you know, as somebody who went to school for merch and in the fashion sphere of things, I mean, they talk a lot about like it's hard because there are things you can and can't copyright in fashion and like in aesthetics. I mean, it's like things about like who can have ownership to like colors and putting them in certain things, but silhouettes and like what is trademarkable. And it's very interesting. But I feel like a lot of times with like counterfeit goods or when it seems like a real quote unquote knockoff, I don't know. Some of that is subjective. And then it also depends on the clout of who you knocked off. And to that point too, you know, there are a lot of brands who have come under fire of like ripping off people who allegedly ripping off people, I guess I should say, who, you know, sell on Etsy or like more small business makers. Like people have definitely come for Urban Outfitters on that stuff. People have come for brands like J. Crew. I feel like people have come for American Eagle a couple times. Nike's definitely been come for. It's interesting, like how do you prove that and how do you claim ownership? And then you deal with like, you know, disparities in power, which to, you know, I'm sure we can get into, but, we deal with some stuff, you know, in terms of the power dynamics of like, you know, we talk about these brands or these artists, it's like, who has the clout? Are they coming for you? But also, who, you know, in the meeting is the most important, who claims, you know, your idea. And that's where maybe somebody seems like more of an asshole, even if it wasn't on purpose, but like, was
it? Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I think in meetings is a good example of how it could happen and feel really bad and also not be on purpose. And power dynamics are at play where you're right about it is. And I thought a lot about this week in like looking into this topic that the person who has like the most power in a situation that like their version of whatever incident, history, authorship, like their version is what is going to probably be believed and have to become everyone else's reality also. But those people in power have just as much cryptomnesia and like fallible memories as the rest of us.
That's right.
And so it does just come down to like, who has the best lawyers, who has the most power, who has people crushing money, and then
who's the most fucking money?
Yeah, and then you get the credit because you can kind of buy it.
That is upsetting.
Indeed it is. Absolutely it's upsetting. But in this New York Times article, I'm going to read you some of this. They say that in response to these cases, Dolly Parton, a renowned country musician. Oh, they didn't need to give her. Queen. They didn't need to give her an identifier. A renowned country musician.
Like, we need to know
musician.
Who she is. Like, we don't pray at our Dolly altars every night. Go on.
Actually, real quick, I watched a clay competition show that reminds me of like Great British, but it's clay instead of cakes. And
you mean
so,
like Bake Off?
Yes, but yes, that's what I mean. But it's clay instead.
I love how you're just calling it, shortening it to just Great British.
It's not important.
okay.
But one of the challenges was to do a bust. And Dolly Parton was one of the people that they were challenged to make a bust of.
I mean, thank God. What an honor.
And she did
honestly.
A special message. She video chatted them. It was great.
Dolly, we don't deserve
we
you.
We do not.
God,
we do
damn
not.
Damn it.
Oh,
I'll be thinking about Dolly.
So,
times.
In response to these cases, Dolly Parton described a creative process that some psychologists might refer to more formally as cryptomnesia.
Okay.
Dolly says, "You don't set out to try and steal anything, but it can happen. Especially in music, because there's so much of it. If you write all the time, you're going to collect those things and not know it." And that is a really good point. If you
That's
are
true. Yeah.
listening to music, also for inspiration. You listen to other music. You have to listen to other music to write music.
And when I think about people designing clothing, they're mm-hmm. looking at the trends and shit all the time and then, you know, designing stuff. And so I do have a little, I don't have empathy for the power dynamics at play of like major corporations and smaller businesses, but I do understand how this happens. Mm-hmm.
No, I was thinking that too when you were talking about Urban Outfitters and stuff. And I was like, well, like if I worked at Urban Outfitters and I was like coming up with new stuff for them, I would just be online, like on Etsy and all over, like looking at new shit to try to come up with something. And yeah, so,
see, what's cool? What are the kids doing? What's hot? What colors seem to be everywhere?
And like, then a week later, I accidentally make the same shoe as someone who has a small business in Pittsburgh and whoop.
Yeah. And whoops, here we are. Yeah, that's, yeah, I do see that that's possible, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So they go on to say that psychologists think that cryptomnesia happens when we fail to register the source of information, which is called source monitoring errors. As our brains amass memories, details are ranked in this filtering process. Okay. The origins of facts often fall secondary to the facts themselves. So basically, if people are all saying something in a meeting and there's a lot going on, your brain is prioritizing and you're going to remember the idea more than like who said it when or.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically like valuing the concept over like all of the quantitative details.
I'm here for that, honestly. Yeah, I thought that I was going to end up more pissed talking mm-hmm. about this, about people who like, you know, end up, you know, taking credit for
blindly
things,
stealing
just
things.
Like this topic in general. Yeah. And I actually just have a lot of empathy because I'm like, fuck, I do this shit. And then I'm like, damn,
I know this could be any of us. I actually used to be really paranoid. Wow. I haven't thought about this in so long. I used to be really paranoid in college writing papers because they were really intense about plagiarism and they put it through that system where it checks to see if you have two sentences like, that match something mm-hmm. else or whatever.
Sure. Or other people's papers and source material. Yeah.
Right. And so I don't remember
what. I forget what that program was that you had to submit or website that you had to like submit your shit to. But mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
And like I never had an issue with it. There would be like one sentence highlighted or like a phrase or something, but it was never enough to count. But
right,
I was
right.
constantly concerned because it felt very real to me that like I could easily come up with the same string of sentences about a topic that a bunch of other people have also had to write about.
Yeah, and if you're all you like, you know, researching
using the
and
same sources,
like, I'll be honest, sometimes like less so in college, but some of the papers that I had to write in high school, I was like, man, this is dumb that we're like spending this, like I think it's valuable to like make points and support them and like think about things critically, I guess, but like sometimes I was like, man, why do I have to read all these other people's opinions and then, like, tell you what all these other people's opinions are, but make them sound like my own.
You know that's this podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Damn it. I hate everything. God damn it. Okay.
Okay. So, where
Sorry,
was I?
Sorry, guys. You can turn it off now. It's fine.
It's fine. This is a book in. Report every week. It's a research paper every week.
It is.
We challenge people's opinions, though, for sure. Like, we talk against the text a lot on this show, I think.
Yes, sometimes you get pissed. Yeah. But don't you feel like that was kind of the vibe in high school? Less so, mm-hmm. again, in college. I think you got to, like, write more, like, original material.
You did.
But, like, in high school, you're just, like, trying to, you know, write a paper that explains something that your English teacher told you was correct using sources that also say what your English teacher said mm-hmm. is the truth. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And yeah. they're all old books and you never really learn how to do the bibliography.
You're not encouraged to disagree with the text. You know what I'm saying?
That's really frustrating.
Yeah. I'm here to get pissed about some stuff. Okay. Yeah,
me too. So they go on to tell us that cryptomnesia may actually be a byproduct of an otherwise efficient memory system, mm-hmm, which I'll hear it out. I would say it's like a heavily prioritizing memory system, but I do think that it's often important to remember like where ideas came from because it can also like lead you to other solutions if you can remember like how you fixed one thing.
Do you think any of that's ego, like... Mm-hmm. You know, to be somebody who, like,
I do
will constantly credit yourself with good ideas you've heard, like, that somehow you're inflating your own intelligence, maybe kind of some sort of a I don't know. It's more than confirmation bias.
That's what I was going to say. It's like ego plus confirmation bias and also a little something else. And I would guess that some people, if they're experiencing cryptomnesia, where like you're remembering an idea, but you're not remembering the source, I would say that like I often don't remember the source of things that I also don't credit.
Like, I know I heard this or said something. Yeah. I don't remember where the article was.
But I don't automatically credit myself for it. And so
yeah, I think that's legit.
Interesting the line of like when you think that you thought it up versus when you're just like, oh, I heard this somewhere and I have no idea. Because that's my life all the fucking time. And I don't think that's efficient of my memory. I think it's fucking annoying, but whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
And others.
Honestly, I'm always really impressed by people who remember, like, who can source where they read things, because I'm like, y'all, I'm absorbing too much information to, like, tell you where it came from.
Yeah, going broad concepts over here. But
it does make me think a little bit about, though, our episode in season 3 on overconfidence.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about how people, like, overestimate their skills or, like, underestimate their opponents. And that feels like it has some overlap here where, like, you're overconfident with your brain. So, like, when there's a good idea in the group and, like, your memory's doing whatever, you might be, like, more keen to credit yourself with it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's something that you thought about or if you thought about, like, by yourself outside of the group as well.
I would also maybe imagine in a power dynamics way, you're more likely to credit yourself with a good idea if you went into that meeting thinking you're the smartest person in the room.
You absolutely are. Yes. Wow.
That's fucked up, but that's real.
It really is. I also want to push back on what they're saying about it being a byproduct of an efficient memory.
Okay, go on.
Because a lot of other sources that I read, but I'm not reading from directly right now, said that cryptomnesia instances increase when you are stressed out, overwhelmed, or there's too much stimuli. And so,
which makes it sound like you're having trouble remembering.
Correct. Like your brain is like, oh, like I can only choose like 10 of these 15 things to remember. So I'm choosing these 10 things. That doesn't seem
right. That's why I feel like you remember the facts and not where you heard them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is my experience. So let's move.
I'd agree with you on that. That feels more accurate to me. I'm not a, you know, psychologist.
I mean, you could argue it either way. I think it's like also kind of like egotistical to say that it's a byproduct of an efficient memory. Like, oh, like I took your idea, like because like I have a super efficient memory. Like, that's what I'm saying.
My memory's so good that I'm stealing your ideas, motherfucker.
I don't have time to remember that you said this. Okay, I don't.
So I'll credit myself.
Listen, we've all been on both sides of that.
That's really true.
All right, into experiments and findings. We love that, I think.
I love findings.
Mm-hmm. So
findings, keepings, you know what I'm saying. Okay.
Oh, so two people. It doesn't, I suppose they're researchers.
Austin and Jamie. Yes, yes.
Well, these people don't
us.
Have.
You know, with my good memory, I assume it was us.
Oh my god, actually that's like Wishbone. I wish that we could have like another show that was like Wishbone where you and I just go back and pretend that like we invented various things throughout history.
Man, fuck Wishbone, who's like out here pretending that he was every historical figure and he's a fucking dog. Okay, talk about overconfidence. Wishbone. Some insertion. You, of course you love Wishbone because you didn't have cable. It was like one of the three shows you had.
It was a good show, and Jackie from Roseanne was in it. She was the...
I think Wishbone was kind of annoying, but go on.
Whatever. It's fine. It's for small children. Okay, I'm not going to derail on Wishbone.
Listen, I'd watch Arthur 9 times.
It's the best one.
I'd watch Wishbone -2.
Arthur's so good. Okay, so these are not doctors. I was like going to say doctor, and then they didn't have a doctor in front of their name, which is
and
why
then you're
I stumbled.
Like, why am I trying to give these people fake PhDs? God damn it. Okay.
So two people named Alan S. Brown and Dana R. Murphy conducted early experiments on...
Jamie M. Ryan, Austin O. Williams. Go on, go on.
Did you say O. Ryan and O. Williams?
No, I said Jamie M. Ryan because your middle initial's in M and Austin O. Williams because my middle initial's in
M. I thought you were just like making both of us like Irish.
Irish. That's awesome.
Okay. Sorry. So Alan and Dana, they don't have PhDs, so we're going first name. Real cozy.
Are they from Ireland, though? That's my next question.
They're not. They're not. Damn. They did early experiments on cryptomnesia in the late 1980s at Southern Methodist University. So it's not UVA, but we'll take it.
I wish to God it was UVA. You know how I feel about the Cavaliers.
And just that they have that parasite paranormal research department. They're doing good work.
I want the research departments exclusively of UVA and Indiana with the, Kinsey stuff of my alma mater. Give me UVA's weird psychology and Indiana University's sex stuff, and I'm covered. I'm good.
I'm also kind of surprised, and I don't know a lot about Virginia, but I just wouldn't expect it to be the state where they have the paranormal research happening.
I think that is indicative of like the school and as a person whose family is from the state on both sides and who spent some time at UVA, shout out, I would really say it's indicative of the school and not of the state's population as a whole.
Absolutely. People travel to school, you know, they're not always from there.
Absolutely.
So back to Southern Methodist University.
Yeah. We can't derail any more than we already have.
Alan and Dana asked participants in a group setting to take turns naming items in different categories, including sports, musical instruments, and four-legged animals.
Okay, this feels pretty straightforward and like a normal kind of psychological study that I'd imagine seeing videos of in like a Psych 101 class.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh my God, the outfits. And these are also all categories that are pretty broad. Like you could come up with a shitload of answers for any of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so absolutely.
Later, Dana and Alan, the researchers, asked participants to recall the items they had come up with and to also brainstorm new examples. In both tasks, recalling the old items and brainstorming new examples, nearly 3/4 of the participants named at least one item that someone else in the group had already mentioned. And overall, plagiarized responses accounted for nearly 10% of the total.
Nearly 10%. That's high.
Yes, it's high, but I also kind of feel like if I think about just conversationally in my life, like how many times is like something getting miscredited? 10% feels kind of right. Like,
yeah, that's
I hear
fair.
People around me say wrong information all the time that I know that they believe, and you just kind of let it go. You know, I feel like it's happening constantly.
No, but that's interesting because I think, they're prompted to have some, you know, acknowledgement of not repeating previous answers, whereas like in your day-to-day comings and goings, that's not like a prerequisite or something someone's unless instructed you to do. Well, unless you're in college. No, but that, that makes, you're right. Like it doesn't seem like a high mark for, you know, day-to-day life, but it does in like a group setting where everybody's just repeatedly, you know, saying dog as an answer to the four-legged animals.
And it also makes me think how this is an example of why it's good to have a wide variety of friends and people around you, not to just be friends with only the same kind of people. Because if you're hearing all the same shit all the time, you're not going to come up with new shit. And you're not going to like expand your ideas. You're going to just repeat that 10%, maybe more. You're going to spit out all your friends' ideas.
Here's an example of a podcast that I listened to many, many years ago. And I remember hearing this snippet of it while I was in a Whole Foods parking lot. Mm. And I have no idea what the podcast was. And I wish I did because I would
Cryptomnesia credit
it. Slash,
at
I'd like
its
to
best.
Listen to it again. Yeah. So I'm fully like full circle on this. But somebody was describing why it's good, you know, when you employ people to employ a wide variety of people who come from different backgrounds because they solve problems differently. And the example they use is condiments. I love this example so much that they're like, okay, so you're making something that you would use ketchup for. He's like, well, if you're from this part of the country, predominantly people store ketchup in the fridge. But if you're from this part of the country, people predominantly store ketchup in the pantry. Mm-hmm. I'll say, like, my friends' families growing up were big, like, ketchup in the fridge. But I was a ketchup in the pantry household, I think, because my parents were from Virginia.
I was ketchup in the fridge for sure.
Totally. And they're like, okay, well, if you're out of ketchup, but you keep it in the fridge, what are you going to sub it with? I don't know, barbecue sauce, you know, some sort of something.
Something else that's in the fridge.
But if you keep it in the pantry, what are you going to sub it with? Maybe, you know, malt vinegar or something else that you, like, keep in the pantry.
Wow.
So, like, based on how you – just this little, like, idiosyncrasy, you look for different ways to solve the problem because you've classified something differently. And I found that so fascinating.
That is fascinating. I love that.
Can't remember where the fuck I heard it, but I love the example.
It's topical that you don't remember, so it's fine.
Okay, perfect. I'm just trying to fulfill. What if I did remember and I was just like, oh, let me just make this better for the show.
Oh my God. That's something we would do. It's fine.
That's not true, though.
Listener,
I really
you'll
don't
never know.
You guys.
You'll never know.
Yeah.
More recent studies have confirmed that cryptomnesia is relatively easy to induce, as we've suspected. In 2015, Gail Dow, who is a psychology professor at Christopher Newport University, she published a study where she asked participants to draw a picture of an alien creature. I'd rather do this study, if I'm honest, rather than come up with words, four-legged creatures.
They're like, draw an alien creature and name it dog, cat, basketball. Listen, I'm out here drawing the aliens.
And this study, so she first shows them an illustration, and so some people she shows an illustration to beforehand and some people she shows nothing to. Obviously, the people who were shown the illustration were more likely to include features from that drawing than if they had no image to influence them. And she, I believe, told them it's not
so
super explicit.
Everybody thinks Jesus is white. Go on.
Yeah. It's not super explicit, but it implies that she told them not to replicate that drawing.
Okay. Yeah.
But also then this makes me think about, like, in art school, like, okay, like, I have a project coming up, like, I need to make something, or like, I want to make something after school. What do I do? Like, I look at other artwork for ideas, for inspiration, to, like, take something and, like, tweak it to be something else. And so I don't know, this test feels like very obvious to me, but I guess she's just, like, really nailing down something that maybe we all suspected. I don't know. But it goes on to say that in other experiments that Gail Dow also did, she found that novices were more likely to commit accidental plagiarism than experts. And I want to pause right there and say that I talked about this the other night while watching the bust-making episode of that clay show that I can't remember what it's called. When I was watching people make busts of Dolly Parton, I was noticing that a lot of these people's busts really look a lot like themselves. And then I had a flashback to a life drawing class that I took in college, so drawing naked people. And everybody, of course, like, you really struggle with faces. Like, faces are really hard to get someone's likeness right.
Yeah, that is really hard. You know, everybody makes fun on the internet of people drawing celebrities poorly, but I'm
tattoos.
Like, good luck, Chuck. Like, seems very hard.
It's very hard. And this made perfect sense to me, but I don't think it's, like, written anywhere, but this was my teacher's theory. And he told me that when you're newer at portraits and you haven't drawn very many people's faces to, like, really look at and study a lot of faces, you'll have a tendency to draw yourself in everything.
Yeah, that's, like, looking at a bunch of people's faces, I think probably, like, enhances your facial vocabulary of, like, these are different ways people can look. Their eyes can be like this. Their nose can be like that. Yeah.
So if you haven't, like, and when you draw someone, you have to really look at, like, what they actually look like, not what you kind of think that they look like.
That's really interesting and makes a ton of sense.
But Gail Dow saying that novices were more likely to commit accidental plagiarism in artwork than experts. That makes sense to me because as you do more and more artwork, like, you figure out how to not accidentally just draw yourself or just draw something that you just saw, because, like, that muscle is stronger. And so I thought that that was just an interesting, I don't know. I've like always noticed that in portraits, like Leonardo da Vinci, the fucking Mona Lisa, like that's him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then I think about all the portraits like in high school that people did. Like people are much better at drawing themselves than they are at drawing each other. And sometimes when you draw each other, it looks like you.
Yeah. No, I do feel like I'm thinking back to this in times that I was like in art class, you know, vibes, be them, you know, extracurricular or like in academia. But I do feel like there was a point in time where I like was cognizant of trying to like not want to see what other people were doing for fear of it influencing what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like when people, I feel the same way about like, you know, problem solving and brainstorming and stuff. Like when you have to do stuff like that, I'm like, I actually don't really want to see what other people think the way to approach this issue is or the problem, because I think it'll influence my own decision and I don't want to be clouded. It's kind of like when you can't remember something and you're trying to get other people to remember something. It's like, I don't want to name, you know, like a bunch of things that I think it could be. It's like when somebody's like, what's his name? Because
it narrows you. You start thinking, you go down a tunnel. All I
can think of is Carl, and then the other person can only think of fucking Carl.
It's like how you can't think of the lyrics or melody of a song when another song is on. It like limits 100%. Your window of what you can think about. Yeah.
That's real. That makes a ton of sense. Yeah. I try to not limit myself that way when I can, or at least when I'm cognizant of it, when I'm trying to come up with something original, you know?
Yeah. But to just quickly circle back on that clay show I was talking about, most of the, so some of them were great because some of the competitors were sculptors talented. And well, some of them just like work, like make portraits and busts, and some of them are like potters, and so like they have a variety of like there's different kinds of clay skills, and it's a pretty diverse group, so they're not all good at every challenge. Like most of them like are amazing at one thing but like can't hand build to save their life or something.
That's actually kind of that I bet that show was fun.
It's really fun for me. Like I just
a girl who went to school for ceramics, go on.
And it's just, I don't know, it's fun to be like back in that world a little bit. The challenges are like super rudimentary, but it's because they all are coming in with different kinds of skills. So it's not like it's all wheel throwing. Anyway, I'm digressing so hard. All I'm trying to say is that the people who were experienced at making busts and carving people's faces, theirs looked much more, of course, like the celebrity that they were making the bust of, as you would expect. Sure. But what I didn't expect that jogged this memory last night was that the people who hadn't made busts before, a lot of the head shapes and like the structure of the face looked just like them. Like they're supposed to be making Dolly Parton or like Tom Jones. And I'm like, that's your jaw. Like that's not Tom Jones' face.
Wow. That's actually so interesting to me that that's kind of our pivot as people. That's like super interesting to
like
me.
That we are standard. Well, that's why white people make Jesus white. Because everyone's like, everything is me.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So, the last thing that this article tells us is just the Dr. Gingrich from the beginning circles back to just let us know that how we store the information that we absorb is very challenging. And it's a very complex system. Well, that's
fucking true. I mean, what an understatement. Oh, the way your brain stores info, kind of, you know, unique, difficult, da-da-da-da. Yeah, no shit, dude.
Yeah. I thought that the conclusion from him was a little bit of a letdown, and I think that we've made some more interesting and better conclusions. And look at us talking against the text. We'll tell you what to think.
I'll tell you, and I'll take credit for it in this boardroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But I was really interested in this, like, originally because I had, like, an experience in my life where someone took an idea that was, like, kind of important to me, and because of a power dynamic situation, I could not push back on it.
Right. That's where it gets gritty. That's where it becomes even more emotional, even if that person, whether or not you're, like, clear on it being malicious or something. Yeah, it's complicated.
And I'm still not clear, but I will say that like it led me to find this just based on like Googling like, can you accidentally steal an idea? Like, can you can you not you know that someone else?
You were like, can this person fuck me over unintentionally, or is it definitely their dick?
Yeah. So did some Googling on that and found this. And it makes me think of like when the annoying thing on your computer happens when you like open a file that's supposed to contain like multiple images or something, and one of them is like cannot find source file, and so you just have that like grayed out square. And that's how my brain feels a lot. But I guess have to have less stimulation and I'll remember more sources.
Did the research that you did for this make you have like greater compassion Absolutely. For the person you felt slighted by?
I think that that's my biggest takeaway, is that like I won't assume automatically anymore that like someone's intentionally stealing an idea or like repeating something I said.
Yeah, I actually think this is like a really helpful thing. Like I think for me, I feel that too, where and it also then maybe to an even extreme makes me feel even more grateful for the people who do recall in moments mm-hmm. and maybe not all the time that something was your idea and are able to credit you.
I will appreciate that more, I think. And what I think about when people accidentally steal it, I have decided to attribute it to what Gail Dow said, which is that being tired, overworked, overwhelmed, etc., increases instances of cryptomnesia, and that we are far more prone to cryptomnesia when multitasking. And so maybe, you're talking to somebody that's doing too many things. And so I'm trying to think about it that way. But then
I would think we're all a little bit more prone to it too, because I think we just live in more of like a multitasking culture. Everybody's like on their phone, like watching a thing, listening to a podcast while they're doing their job.
And we get so much information every day because of that. Mm-hmm. Like as far as like the history of humans, like we absorb the most information on the daily, increasingly exponentially all the time more.
Yeah, that's fucking real.
And so I think that this would probably just like increase and increase and increase as we like continue to consume more and more stuff. Because you just can't remember where everything came from. And that like sounds dumb to talk an hour about can't remember where everything came from, but we just did it.
We just did it.
I do have a lot of power dynamic feelings about it though. And I'm really glad that we were like able to touch on that kind of throughout, because as I was reading about this, I was like, there's something here, though, about, like, that some people don't get challenged on this ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a problem. Like, I want to have greater empathy for maybe instances that this happens. But I also don't think that there aren't people out there actively and intentionally, like, stealing ideas. And it's not that they don't know that they didn't come up with it. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there are organizations or people in elevated positions with more power, money, lawyers, whatever, who fuck over the little guy. Like that is also true.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. And the part that I can control is I can make sure that like I'm trying to give people credit more frequently and try to not assume the worst of others, I guess.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Well, should we? Is it time? Do you have other questions or anything before we cue the vibraphone?
No, I think it's time for a verbal game. So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. All right. We haven't done a marry, fuck, kill in a minute. Just like a straight up one. So
that has me hyped. If you were like, and we're not doing one tonight, I would have been pissed.
No. We're going back. So I'm going to have you, marry, fuck, kill, these three famous plagiarizers.
Okay, I'm ready.
Melania Trump, who famously plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech.
Michelle Obama. Yeah, classic.
Dan Brown, who's been repeatedly accused by multiple authors of stealing story elements and pieces. And to that I say,
also, we
like,
talk about Dan Brown so much on this podcast from time to time.
Absolutely.
What's up, Dan Brown, and your Da Vinci Code? Speaking of Da Vinci and Mona Lisa and all the things, anyway.
And then the last choice is going to be Helen Keller, who was accused of plagiarizing a story she wrote when she was 11 years old.
What child didn't plagiarize when they were 11?
I don't know.
Isn't that part of being a kid?
I don't know.
Oh my God. Yeah. That you like regurgitate things because you're trying to find your own voice?
Exactly. We have a whole episode on the Virgin Daughters where you can watch, listen to us talk about children regurgitate their parents' statements.
Well, I think out of compassion for how I'm pissed that people are framing this narrative about Helen Keller, I think I marry Helen.
Well, also know, though, that that introduces a tricky caretaker role obstacle.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. She had a friend. Who was that woman? The miracle worker? Who was she?
I mean, that was you that woman's her. Life. I guess, yeah, I know. You could be
she
the
could live
worker.
With us.
You have know, you ever seen that? Help. Have you real quick? Have you ever seen that video of the stage play of The Miracle Worker where the woman playing Helen Keller really keeps her eyes closed and falls off the stage?
No, but that's awesome. I honestly just want to say as a rule of thumb that I think like the stage play The Miracle Worker is pretty disrespectful to the communities of people with disabilities.
I haven't like, seen it, but I'm gonna guess that like
it's not yeah. great.
I won't be in it. I won't try out for
just
it.
Just imagine, like, any, like, person who's like, oh, I'm in theater being like, and now I'll portray Helen Keller on the stage. It just...
Wow. That's like if people were doing...
It's never really read great to me, personally. Community theater. I don't know. Maybe there's some versions. Let us know if you have hot and different takes on Helen Keller but and The Miracle Worker. But also, I want to say, like, respectfully, too, where you say this caretaker role, I don't think Helen Keller lived to be that old. So I feel like... I could be wrong, but I just feel like, you know, it'll be like a chapter in my life, but not the whole book. You feel me?
I do.
And I don't know.
And she probably has an estate, not to be insensitive.
Yeah, listen, she's getting those miracle worker royalties or something. We can't know. I don't know. I don't, all these people are not great, but yeah, I'm going to kill Melania and I guess I'll fuck Dan Brown as someone who's, you know, sexually partial to, you know, phallic things. I guess sure, yeah. That seems like the intuitive lay. And I don't know, maybe I would make like a bunch of like crude Da Vinci Code, like puns sexually the entire time, wow. which seems awesome.
It does.
What about you? What are you doing?
So I kind of feel like I have to kill Melania because it's just like... You know, who's been there already, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I don't need this guy's dirty but sloppy seconds.
I don't need to be Eskimo
yeah.
siblings with, yeah.
with DT. Yeah, no, hard, gross. Yeah. I hate it when people call it Eskimo. That's so weird. Anyway.
Okay, so I have to kill her and then... God, my choices are Dan. Okay, I'm going to marry Dan Brown and we're going to have a wild life together. And I'm going to have a really intuitive sexual experience with Helen Keller.
That's what I'm saying. Like, in terms of like for life, I feel like Helen Keller's good with her hands. You know,
she's putting it down, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably like could be a gratifying sexual experience.
It really could be. Yeah. All her other senses are heightened.
I feel like she would be very sensual, you know?
Exactly. She can't, I almost said smell her taste. She can't see her.
That, cut this. We can't. I can't. Help. Listen, I thought the miracle worker was insensitive. Who made this podcast?
No, I just said the wrong sense, but yeah, it's insensitive for other reasons. Go on.
Go. I just, listen, here we are making almost the same choice. All right. Enjoy your wild life with Dan Brown. Honestly, I think Dan Brown's life is probably kind of dull.
I would guess that it's dull. So I guess I'd probably be... I see myself on a yacht for some reason with Dan. Or on Dan's yacht without him.
You see yourself wealthy on those Da Vinci Code paychecks. That's all you're saying.
That is what it is. Absolutely. And I would...
You probably met Tom Hanks once. Okay.
Probably. And I would want to pick Dan's brain a little bit and figure out how much of his own bullshit he believes. Because I saw
that's
like,
actually a good point. I want to know
an
that too.
Interview with him and I think Barbara Walters a long time ago where he
Barbara
was like talking like as though all of the story was factual.
I can't with Dan Brown. I fucking
or that
can't.
It was historical fiction. I guess like the characters that were present day were fictionalized, but he was saying that like the historical elements were true.
Dan Brown, who claims he knows the truth about Jesus. Anyway,
we can't continue to talk about. We could do a whole biopic on Dan Brown. Oh my God, that would
honestly,
prove to be. I don't know.
Of all the individual figures that we've covered on this podcast, and they are few and far between. We talked about Sacagawea.
Bobby Fischer.
We talked and Bobby Fischer. And I think that's it for like full episodes dedicated to an individual. And I feel like if I had to nominate one person right now, it would be Dan Brown.
Yeah, no, this is great. And I'm going to have to bleep this, but I just Googled him and I've never seen a photo of him before. And he looks like our friend who wore the Boy Scout shirt all the time and who read this book. That's our friend who read this book first.
Wow. Okay, well, you know what? Listen, if you've got suggestions this week for the singular figure we should do an episode about, you know we want to hear them. As always, you can get at us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. Good night, good morning, happy Da Vinci coding or something.
Da Vinci decoding. That was bad.
That's right. Decode that shit.
Bye.
Dan Brown. Bye.
And then take it and say that you made it. Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.